Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Well, well, well. I thought we were going to start this podcast by talking about the fashion from the Oscars.
I know.
It's always my favourite morning of the year when we get to talk about who wore what on the red carpet. But Jesus Christ, Will Smith.
I know. I'm so confused by the whole thing as well. Like, I haven't sat and gone through, like, I'm probably sitting on one side at the moment because I've only really seen one side. But I just don't get it. Like, why did he think that was okay? I understand if someone offends, you know, your family member, of course. But in my head, I'm sort of seeing it in a work environment. You know, like he
of
was
course.
In a work environment. And so, you know, does someone insult your partner in a work environment? You don't punch them in the face.
So basically, this is how my morning has gone because I was in for Amanda today. So I got in a taxi this morning at 5 a.m., was looking online, you know, went straight to the dresses, got into work, and the security guys were glued to their computer screen. And I was like, oh, morning, guys. And they were like, oh, my God, have you seen the Will Smith slap? And I was like, well, come on. I was like, Will Smith and Chris Rock, they must have done it as a prank. I genuinely thought it was a prank. By the time I'd gone upstairs, I'd watched it on YouTube, so in the lift, and I was aghast. I could not get my head around what I had seen. I mean, so let's just break this down for a second. Do you know the context of the joke? It was the fact that Chris Rock was basically saying a really inappropriate joke, taking the mickey out of Jada and her alopecia, which is horrendous.
Yes, bang out of order, completely and utterly out of order.
Bang out of order. Like you said, at that point, to then see, he was laughing, right? Will Smith was laughing. To then see him get up, walk onto stage. I mean, at that point, do you think he thought, oh, I'm going to slap Chris here? It was just the most horrendous display of violence. Like, it was horrible to witness.
Yeah, I know that this is what I don't. This is what I don't understand. It's like two very inappropriate things. Like, first off, slagging someone, and especially for a condition that they, you know, have no control over, and is probably, you know, she's probably quite self conscious of, and I don't know what he thought, you know, he was going to achieve by doing that. But then for that, then Will Smith to think that that would be a good reaction.
Oh God, on such a, I just can't. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. And my overriding feeling was that, like, how sad that moment was, that it absolutely categorically should never have happened. But also for the rest of the Oscars, you know, like Beyonce's performance and Jessica Chastain winning her Oscar. And, you know, just that whole moment was for Venus and Serena, and they'll never get that moment back. Yeah. And I just, yeah, I mean, wow. I think every single person globally would have had a conversation about the Will Smith slap today. So,
oh, absolutely. And also, like, like you say, it's just completely taken over the whole event. Like, no one is talking about anything else other than that scenario and that happening. And how he could just carry on as well, like nothing had happened. Because I'm sure things have happened in the past and people have been, like, escorted out.
Look at Kanye
yes,
when
exactly.
Kanye stood on stage. Didn't he get his Grammy taken away from him or something?
Yeah, but it's fine. He just sat back down like nothing had happened. I mean,
I know.
Imagine if our children behaved like that, hey?
I mean, Jesus. Kit keeps hitting people at school and I'm like, what's going to happen to him? Is he going to be all right? I mean, no. You'll
clearly
be pleased
he'll
to hear.
Be fine. He just gets to sit back down again.
You'll be pleased to hear that he's actually seems to have turned a bit of a corner and peace at last. podcast has resumed. And actually, I think it was coming off the back of him having quite a nasty bug that he was kind of acting out and not really being himself. And I think you can tell from my voice that I'm still fighting this bloody cold.
I know. It's like we are, what is it, 7-8 days in now that you've been rough?
Yeah.
Ed, there's so much stuff going around, like literally. I feel like last week was just a write-off for me, complete write-off.
Yes.
Norovirus. Yeah. And then I had 2 days drinking, which was a really bad idea on the back of norovirus.
Jesus, who are you?
And yesterday I just felt so sorry for myself.
Poor you for having all the fun.
Oh, God.
We had a few people around on Saturday, and at one point all the kids were on the trampoline, and I like Kit came off and was like, "Mermaid," and he was like covered in green snot. And I looked in his hair and I was like, "Wow, there's so much snot in your hair. But I don't think it can be yours." You know, because it was like in a position that he would never have been able to get.
It would be someone else's. Yeah, your nose could not possibly be able to touch that part of your head. Oh, it's so grim. It is.
Listen, let's get into the chat today because it was a really amazing conversation. Yeah. I'm so glad that we finally got to sit down virtually with this incredible lady. And actually, what a great time as well, because just released her new book. She's kind of coming out of maternity leave. She's really kind of seeing motherhood on the other side of that sort of first year of like fogginess. So it was a really raw chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just also really enjoyed, you know, listening to how her and her fiance met the first night. I mean, you know, stick around obviously for the chat because I don't want to give anything away, but their meeting was funny and they were very drunk and it's all quite a normal situation that probably happens every day at work parties.
There you go. Who are we chatting to today?
Today we are chatting to Kate Lawler.
I've got to say, I've got the biggest smile on my face today because we have wanted to sit down with this incredible woman for a really long time. Presenter, podcaster and mother now, I love saying that, to Noah. This incredible lady shot to our screens back in 2002. She was the first female contestant to win Big Brother. I know. And I knew at the time watching her, I was like, she's going to be a pal, this one. Since then, of course, she's carved out a very successful media career, broadcaster, radio presenter. She's also now an author with Maybe Baby on the Mother Side, which is out now. It's Kate Lawler. What an intro.
Thank you for bigging me up. I can go now. You've just done all the hard work.
Done. We always like to start by asking our guests, how are you? How's your morning been? How have the last couple of weeks been? What's going on?
Morning has been full on, as you can imagine, with three children, two being dogs. Shirley's had three fights in the park with three other dogs. She's honestly such a fire starter. She's laying next to me now after having pooed in this room that I'm talking to you from. Noah's great. She's very excited because my twin sister's just got here and she loves her. So she's downstairs now. Just tell me if you can hear her because my twin sister tends to sing nursery rhymes really loudly.
Which ones are we going to get? Wheels on the Bus?
I could just hear Wheels on the Bus just before we connected. Right. And I was like, I thought I was loud. And I've just had a toasted hot cross bun, which the Hanson made me. He said, just eat something before you do this podcast because you're going to be hungry.
Dreamy. And my husband stole my charger. That's what he's done for me today. Caused me grief. So great.
I love that you call him the Hanson. Because you guys seem into each other. I mean, the chemistry is really obvious.
Is it?
Like, you look so great together in all of your photos. Look, I know, Instagram curated and stuff, but I've seen you guys together. They're, you know, you're a good match.
I'm really into him. I don't know how he feels about me after the past year. Please still want to marry me. Yeah, I love him. He is the one. He is so handsome, but he's more than just a pretty face, guys. Okay, let's not make him feel. But he doesn't like walk around going, "Yeah, I know I'm fit." He's very humble about his appearance.
How did you guys meet?
We met at the Kerrang Awards. You know, Kerrang magazine and Kerrang radio. So I used to work for Kerrang years ago, and I was like hosting their drive time show and on the radio, and he worked for Bauer Media. So he worked in sales. He used to sell the magazines. So we both happened to be at the Kerrang Awards in 2013. And I came down from Birmingham on the train to the awards. I was living in Birmingham at the time. He was living in London. And I just remember getting very drunk very quickly because at the Kerrang Awards, they put a bottle of Jägermeister on every table. And that gets drunk very very rapidly by everybody in rounds of shots. So I don't really remember much of that night, but I do remember him coming over to me, like making a proper move, proper beeline he did, and just pushed somebody out the way who was speaking to me and was like, "Hi." I'm Martin. And I was like, oh, have you got any nicknames? I'm really not a fan of the name Martin. I feel so bad now. And I'm really sorry if your name's Martin and you're listening. All I could think of was, you know, Little Britain, the comedy, the yes. sketch where David Walliams is the, I'm sure he plays the head teacher.
Martin.
Martin, yeah. It's Martin. Linda. Martin, it's Linda. So I just said, have you got any nicknames? And he said, yeah. Why? I was like, I'm just not really a fan of the name Martin. Reminds me of the snotty-nosed kid in my class at school. That's and then he hysterical. Said, yeah, my nickname's Bodge, but that's just for friends. And I was like, well, we're not any more than that at the minute. So yeah, I'll call you Bodge. And the reason his name's Bodge is because it's the first three letters of his last name, which is really difficult to pronounce. So everybody always pronounces his name Bodgetos. But it's not Bodge Toss. So that's how he got the nickname Bodge.
And now he's been promoted to the handsome.
I know, yeah. I just like, when I met him, I was like, you are really handsome. And I just like calling him the handsome. So it's been his nickname since I met him.
He's come a long way.
Was it a bit of a thunderbolt moment between the two of you? Because I say that about me and Doz. I think when we met, I knew. I was a bit like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd met the handsomes before, but this one was handsome and funny and smart and fit.
Yeah, ticked all the boxes.
Yeah.
So you knew straight away.
Yeah.
Well, I was pretty hammered. So I do remember getting in a taxi with him. I remember saying, I've got to go back to Birmingham because I'm going for drinks with work pals, but you can come with me if you want. And he said, come with you back to Birmingham. And I said, yeah, why not? And he was like, all right then. So I went, grab that bottle of wine.
Yes!
On the table, drink that on the way home. So then we got to London Euston and I remember him being at the ticket machine going, am I really doing this? Is a wind up. I was like, just get your ticket and get on the train. And then we got on the train and I was so hammered. I asked a woman who had a massive cello on the seat next to her if she could move her violin because I didn't like facing backwards. And she was, I mean, I was so drunk. And then Bodge said, let's just go and sit over here. And we sat on the train together and then we drank the bottle of wine that I'd nicked from the Kerrang Awards. And then I don't really remember what happened. All I remember is that I was so drunk by the time I got to Birmingham New Street that I forgot to go to work drinks. I just went taxi to 27A, whatever road I was living on.
Yeah.
And he came back with me. And then in the morning, I was like, hi, what's your name? Did we?
Oh my God, this is amazing.
And he was like, yeah, we did. And I was like, oh, that's a wounder because I don't remember a thing. Yeah, I know. Terrible, right? And then I said, you know what? We laid in bed for a long time, just chatting and chatting and chatting. And then I was like, okay, he was like, I've got to go to work. And I was like, who works on a Saturday? He went, it's Friday. And I was like,
oh, I've got to go to work.
Oh my goodness, it's Friday. And so I dropped him to the station and I went into work and everyone said to me, where were you last night? I said, don't ask, it's a long story. And we became friends on Facebook before he left. And so we were chatting on Facebook. And then like a couple of weeks later, I said, I'm down in London this weekend if you fancy meeting up. And he just didn't expect it. He thought it was a one night stand. He thought that was it. He walked into his office to a round of applause because everybody knew where he'd gone. Yeah.
Oh God, this is incredible.
Everyone knew where he'd gone. He walked into the office the next day with the same clothes on that he'd worn to the Kerrang Awards. And everyone stood up and gave him a round of applause. And he was like, cheers, thanks, nice one. Yeah, and then I met up with him. And I nearly, very nearly didn't. I remember it was Father's Day. Yeah, because it was June. June is Father's Day, isn't it? So yeah. We met in the June. And then I was going for a Father's Day meal with my family. And I said, I'll come to you in the evening. We'll go for like a drink. And then I'll stay at yours because I lived in Birmingham at the time. And I remember going out the night before and I was so drunk and I was so hungover. God, I used to get pissed.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say that.
Oh, I did. And then I remember going to my dad's Father's Day meal and I was like, I can't bother to go out with this guy tonight. I don't really remember what he looked like. I can only see one picture of him on Facebook. I'm not sure if he, I just don't know what to do. And I ended up going and I'm so glad I went because we had a drink and I was just, yeah, I think I pretty much knew that I would enter in some kind of relationship with him straight away. I knew that I just didn't, that there would be something there. And then we did long distance for 2 years. I was in Manchester pretty much straight after I'd met him and he was in London. So yeah, we did long distance for 2 years, which I thought was really, it had to be that way because I'd just come out of a really long-term relationship that was quite toxic and left me and my ex heartbroken because we'd been together for quite a long time. And I just did not have any interest in meeting someone else. So yeah. I said to him, look, it has to be chilled because I can't, I wasn't sure if I was even ready for a boyfriend. And actually we did take it easy, like for the first few months.
Well, that's quite nice though, in a way, having that long distance thing between you, because it does slow things down. It's not like you can just, you know, pop around there on a Monday evening and ring the doorbell and be like, I'm here with the curry.
Yeah. And you can keep things fresh and exciting, can't you? If you're not with each other all the time, they're not seeing you like poo.
Yeah.
straight away.
I have never pooed in front of anybody.
We're the same. I've never done a poo.
I think I've known my husband for 16 years and we've never pooed in front of each other.
Thank God, still keeping it
fresh.
What about trumping? Because I'm mortified. I don't trump in front of him.
No, I don't really. I can't.
If I do, I get really embarrassed.
Yeah. No comment from this side, but let's just say
somebody loves it.
Sometimes they accidentally slip out when I'm bending over to do my shoe up, and then they get really loud ones.
But you can blame it on the kids, so it's fine.
So embarrassing. When I was pregnant, I had really bad uncontrollable wind, and it was so awful. And he used to find it hilarious because he said, you know, you've gone our whole relationship, you've not like guffed in front of me once, and now you can't control them. And it's really funny because you're mortified every time it happens. And I was so embarrassed, but it's really hard. I think the pressure of it all is just, anyway, let's stop talking about fine.
So your relationship started off, you were long distance. And then when did you decide it's like, this is serious? And then you started having conversations about whether or not to start a family.
So I remember saying to him on that very first date that I wasn't going to go on because I was so hungover. I just want to lay my cards on the table, by the way. I'm not interested in marriage. I don't want kids. This is just a bit of fun. And he thought, I know what he was thinking. He tells me now. He was thinking, calm down. I've literally just met you for a drink and that's fine. But I didn't ask him. I think I remember asking him at the time if he wanted to be I don't think I did ask him. I wouldn't have asked something like that on the first day if he wanted to be a dad, if he wanted kids. But for me, it wasn't even worth talking about because it was just the first date and we were having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
But he knew. So I'd laid my cards on the table. So he knew I didn't want kids or I didn't want to get married. And I think we made it official in like September or October. So 4 months after we'd been together. And then I think the serious conversations didn't really begin until a few years later because we were both just enjoying our relationship and enjoying traveling together and going out together and doing loads of fun dating activities together. You know, once I moved to London after 2 years, we really then kind of started, we moved in together straight away once I moved to London. So then we were enjoying living together. So that was a kind of a year or two. And it was only after about a year of living together that he said, it would be good to start thinking about the future. And I said, just remember what I told you on the first date, bud. And he went, well, yeah, but now we've been together for a long time. And when you make a commitment to somebody and you're together a long time, the next logical step is that you do something like you get married or you have kids. And I said, yeah, that's what society says we should do, but we're not all the same. And it's absolutely fine if you don't want to get married. And it's also fine if you don't want children. And he said, yeah, but we kind of have to be on the same page, don't we? Because we're in a relationship, which was a very good point.
Yeah.
And so then followed years, actually, of really uncomfortable and awkward conversations because I always reminded him of how I felt and I didn't feel any different, despite being madly in love with him and wanting to marry him, actually, by that point. But I still didn't change my mind about having kids. I was really happy with just a dog.
Yeah. What were the reasons in your head that you didn't want to become a mother?
I enjoyed my freedom. I enjoyed my life. I felt really happy and fulfilled in the relationship I had and with the people around me and my dog that I only ever craved another dog. I often wonder, actually, if I didn't have dogs, if I'd have wanted children sooner.
I was just about to say that because I don't want to get a dog because I don't have a dog now. The kids want to get a dog and I love dogs. I grew up with dogs, but I also don't know if I've got the capacity to love another being because I've got three children that I have to love and look after and they're really demanding. And I think if a dog started coming at me with the apps and the feeding and I need a walk, I'd be like, well, fuck off, because I haven't got time to do that now. Had it been the other way around, I might have felt differently.
It's a really good point. And I think that I felt so in love with Baxter and he was my baby. He still is my baby. And I loved being, I was so maternal with him that I felt like I had a child. Like I would walk him every day. I would take him on little doggy play dates. I would, you know, I had to feed him. I had to pick up his poo. I was a mother to Baxter, but that was enough for me. I never craved anything else. I didn't have that loud biological clock ticking away inside me like so many women feel. And it still just didn't appeal to me despite like so many of my friends in our friendship group and, you know, both my sisters as well having kids. It wasn't something that I looked at and thought, I want that. I was really happy with just Bodge. I wanted to focus on my career. I was very career driven in my, you know, early 30s where I wanted to make a success of the radio. And I really enjoyed going on holiday with Bodge and us just being able to do what we wanted to do. Because despite all my friends being really happy with children, I could, you know, you do see that you're not You're not able to do everything. Like I could leave Baxter at home and go to the cinema with Bodge. I could leave Baxter at home and go out for dinner with Bodge. And I really loved my independence and a disposable income. And I felt really, really just complete. I didn't feel like I needed anything else, which so often women are told, oh, having children completes you. I'm probably not the only person who felt absolutely like complete and fulfilled and perfectly fine without children. So having somebody with, you know, who I was completely in love with, keep banging that drum of like, you know, we're together. This is the commitment we should make. Like it was really frustrating, but it also kind of did make me think, you know, yeah, you're right. I would love to kind of make another commitment to you, like a long-term commitment to you. So why don't we get married? Like, let's get married. I'm happy to get married. So we spoke about marriage. And in 2018, he proposed, and it was a surprise because I'd last minute booked a trip to Bruges and it was my idea to go. But he already had the ring that he was planning to propose to me with later that year. But he was like, I'm going to do it in Bruges because she won't suspect anything. Mm. And yeah, I was really surprised, but I was so happy. And I thought, yeah, this is great. I kept having to say to him, look, we'll try after we're married. So that was me putting it off for another couple of years.
So were you at that point saying to him, listen, let's get married. Okay, there's a chance I'm going to want to have kids. Let's just wait a bit. And were you buffering him off slightly? Or were you genuinely thinking, actually, do you know what? After we get married, I might come around to the idea.
Completely, if I'm completely honest with you, I was hoping I'd come around to the idea.
Okay.
I was hoping. Because we'd had an accident. We'd actually got pregnant the year before he asked me to marry him. And it was devastating because, one, I had to go through an abortion, which is just awful. And I felt guilty because of all the women out there who can't get pregnant or who are on like long IVF journeys. Mm. But also it really upset me that I'd got pregnant and that I didn't want the baby. And I felt terrified. Like when I saw the pregnancy, you know, the positive pregnancy line, I felt terrified because I wasn't ready and I didn't want a baby, but I was with somebody that I was in love with. And I just thought to myself, I'm 37. Like, if I don't want a baby now, am I ever going to want a kid?
Yeah.
And we had like obviously a lengthy discussion, and he said, for what it's worth, I don't think it's the right time for us. We just moved into a flat. We just bought our own flat. Like we were renting before, we'd bought our own flat. We were just about to like look at adopting another dog. And I had to make the decision to go for it. And, so that was really hard. And if you've been through it, it's awful.
Yeah.
But it did scare me because I just thought to myself, am I ever going to want a baby? And then we realized, you know, in 2018, after he proposed to me and I said yes, that we were in quite a unique position in the fact that I was in my late 30s and I didn't want children because most women, in fact, all my friends around me had babies or were trying or wanted children later on in life, but I didn't. And so I thought it'd be a good idea for a podcast. So that's when we did Maybe Baby. And the podcast was just us finding out what it's really like from those who've done it, in-depth conversations. Because I think the most commonly used phrase when you're talking about having a baby with somebody who has and you haven't is, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it's the best thing you'll ever do.
Yeah.
But it's such a like, if you need to delve, you need to say, if you were to say something like,
what does that mean?
Let's sit down for an hour and discuss it. Because you can't, like that phrase is just so flippant and you're like, oh, okay. But actually, they're right. It is the hardest thing you'll ever do. But you need to kind of delve into how hard it is. Like, I don't want to scare anyone, but if someone was saying to me, oh, I'm on the fence, I don't know, just read my book. You'll see how hard it can be. It's not necessarily hard for everybody. And I don't want to scare people who are thinking of whether or not to try for a baby. But yeah, none of my friends told me how hard it really was. They all just said, it's hard, but it's great.
I don't think people do because I think if people really broke down, I mean, let's not talk about the positives now. Let's just talk about the negatives. If people just told you the hard shit, it would be virtually impossible for you to get your head around. Okay, look, I know all that stuff is coming, but you haven't. But you know, I don't know about the love because I haven't felt that sort of love before. So I'm just going to focus on the bad stuff. You wouldn't necessarily have a child, I don't think.
No, you wouldn't.
I mean, no one told me about the sleep. I mean, we'll come on to all of this, but I just wanted to. Take you back to when I was sitting on a panel with you, and I was trying to work out when it was, and I think it was in either late 2018 or early 2019. Do you remember this?
Yeah. Had we done the podcast at that point?
I
think we had. I think that's maybe why I was on the panel.
Yes.
Because that was 2019. So I was already engaged. And we were planning a wedding for 2020. But we were doing the podcast because I said to Bodge, let's get married and then we'll try for a baby after the wedding. But he took that with a pinch of salt because I'd say every year from like 2016, let's try next year, ask me next year. And he'd go, okay. And then he'd ask me like 2 weeks after New Year's Eve, after I'd, you know, he'd let me have 2 weeks to get rid of the come down of New Year's Eve. And then he'd start talking about it. And I'd always say, yeah, I'm not ready still.
You definitely weren't ready. And I remember leaving that panel that day and thinking, I actually really respect you more than I ever have done. And I was like, there's something so brilliant in the way that she's sitting there and saying, do you know what? I just do not want to be a mother. And there was a room, you could see there was a room full of people that were like that. Oh, yeah. No, no. And they were putting their hands up going, no, no, you'll feel differently. You'll never regret having a baby. I remember someone saying, and you were like, I do not want to have a child. And I left because I'm always that person that's like, if you don't want to have a kid, don't have a kid. Like,
exactly,
it's completely your decision. And then what happened 3 months 3 months after that?
I think it must have been like October we did that.
Right.
And I think that was the month. It was when I was doing the podcast. We'd also visited the Lister Fertility Clinic to see if we were even biologically able to have a child.
Yeah.
Because I thought, what, you know, we're debating it and you're, you know, you're really pushing me to have a, I say, it sounds like he really pushed me, but like he was on at me all the time. He was.
Yeah.
You know, let's just see if it's even possible. So we went to the fertility clinic. His checkup was absolutely fine. My scan was fine, but my AMH blood test indicated that I might go through the menopause early and that I had hardly any eggs left. And so it really brought home the fact that very soon it wouldn't be my decision to make or to even, I wouldn't have a choice. I wouldn't be able to discuss it with Bodge because soon the decision would be taken out of my hands and I wouldn't be able to have my own child because I would run out of eggs. But even when I was told that, and Mari Wren, who is the, I think she's deputy director, but Mari Wren said to me, when are you getting married and when are you planning on trying? And we said, yeah, we are, in about like 9 months after the honeymoon. And she said, would it be the worst thing to walk down the aisle pregnant? And I said, yeah, actually, I don't want to be walking down the aisle pregnant. So she said, I just wouldn't put it on the back burner for too long. But even hearing that didn't make me go, right, let's get cracking. Because I still wasn't ready. I still wasn't ready.
What was it then that made you change mind?
Yeah,
what happened?
I reckon it has to have been because I was already thinking about it. And that really brought it home, hearing that my AMH was really low. And when our wedding got cancelled in 2020, I just thought to myself, okay, I have this was in April. So COVID hit in March 2020. Our wedding got cancelled in April. And then I turned 40 in May. And I said to Bodge, I'm coming up to 40. I'm starting to feel differently about my life and about, you know, entering a new decade. And also that probably it's the decade where your eggs are probably going to run out or, you know, who do we know that has a child in their 50s? Like it's possible, but you know, it's not going to happen for me. I'm never going to be a mum in my 50s. So this is the decade where I try for a baby or I don't, or it's game over. And so I was acutely aware that my 40th birthday was approaching and that our wedding had been cancelled. And I remember the conversations with Mari saying, don't put it on the back burner for too long, but I wanted to get married before we had a kid. And we postponed our wedding till 2021. And I said to Bodge, look, I am worried if we leave it another year, what if it's, you know, we try and when I really actually want to try and it's too late. So we had like a couple, literally it was a couple of weeks of conversations in May because we said, let's try now. And then if I get pregnant now, then we can still get married in 2021. I'll have like 3 months to get in my dress, which like thinking about it now, what idiots we were. Like how naive was I to think that 3 months after having a baby, I'd be okay to walk down the aisle. But we tried and we got pregnant straight away.
Right.
And I remember seeing the test and thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so happy. I want this baby.
Oh.
And it's weird. It's so strange, but we are human beings. We can change our minds.
Yeah.
It's really odd. Like I think it has to have been a combination of, I think it really brought it home when I found out that very soon I wouldn't be able to have children because I guess for so long I just resisted, but I kind of made it part of my personality. Like, oh yeah, I'm Kate and I don't want kids.
Yes.
And that's what Bodge always tells me. And I don't know if there's an element of truth in that, but I guess I just went so long enjoying my life and having my independence. And once we adopted Shirley, we had two dogs and I felt like our family was complete, but just the fertility clinic, you know, doing the podcast and speaking to parents who've done it, they all really bigged up how great it was. Again, none of them told me how really hard it was. I don't know why. I remember the day after my 40th birthday, I remember sitting in the park and I was with Baxter and Shirley. It was a really sunny day. And sometimes we'd just sit down with other dogs and we'd just have chats with other dog parents. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I'm 40. Like I remember when my parents turned 40 and I was a kid and I used to think, I remember thinking they are old.
Yes.
And I know it's not old. Yeah. I know it's not old, but I'm not 20. I'm not in my childbearing years anymore. My 30s, you know, my 20s, I raved hard. I did all the fun stuff. My 30s, I really focused on my career and I met the man of my dreams and I got a dog and I bought a house. And now, like, I feel like I'm ready for something new, but I don't know what it is. And Bodger's like, it's a baby. You're ready for a baby. Bam, we got pregnant.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Do you ever have moments where you question your decision? I know I definitely do. So I some days
do
I think
you,
to myself. Well, I do. Some days I think to myself, what is this? What is this life that I'm living right now? What is this? What am I doing? Like, you know, and you know, you've got Instagram there, so you can see people who without children having a lovely time, and I'm sitting there like looking at worms in Axel's bum and then having to take worming tablets. And I'm thinking, what? Why did I do this?
What is this life?
Why did I go into this? What? Yeah, I do. Sometimes I do think that. And it's
why haven't you spoken about worms on the podcast?
Because we've got worms now again.
Whoa.
In this house. Whoa. It is like, so annoying.
How does that even happen?
Well, they get it, they pass it around at school. I used to get it constantly. I can't believe I'm admitting this. There was one girl in my class.
But
I don't have worms now, but I used to get anyway, it can happen. It can get passed around freely. And then they all hold hands and then they pass it on and then they touch the bum and they itch their bums and they pass it. They put their fingers in their bums.
Great.
They put their fingers in their bums. Great.
Okay, anyway, back to your decision on having a child.
Do you ever wonder why you went into this?
Well, you've been very honest with your answer, G. So maybe, Zoe, do you?
No.
Ever?
No. I don't ever question why I've had my kids and I never regret having them. But I do think, like, how much more can one woman take?
Yeah.
So I have those moments where sometimes I think it would be fun to, like, smash a window with a bat just to make a loud noise to shut everyone up. Is that called being on the edge? That is called being right on the edge.
Are you okay, hun?
I'm not okay.
This is the thing. I think all mums struggle on a day-to-day basis with juggling so much because we pick up more of the chores, we pick up more of the responsibilities. And I know times are changing and actually Bodgie's a very hands-on dad. So we kind of split things more than I reckon your average couple does. And I'm really fortunate because he has a job which, you know, it's he can be flexible. But there were obviously times, and I talk about this in the book, in the early days where I couldn't believe what I'd done because I never felt like I would be happy again. When I was in the deepest, darkest depths of depression and I couldn't see a way out and I couldn't see Noah ever changing and I couldn't understand how I didn't know how to stop her crying and I didn't know how to wind her properly and I couldn't work out why she was projectile vomiting. I couldn't stop the reflux and all these emotions. It was very early on, like the first 3 months, where I used to think, why have I done this? Why? Mm. I'm not a good mum. Like I'm normally good or at least competent in anything I turn my hand to, but this is just so out of my comfort zone and I'm treading water constantly and I feel like I'm drowning and I don't feel like I can do this. And back in the day, yeah, there were moments where I felt like it was a mistake and I resented Bodge because I was constantly thinking to myself, well, he was the one that wanted a kid. And if he hadn't, if he didn't want kids, then we wouldn't have one because I didn't want one. And it was all those feelings. But obviously, even back then, if somebody had come over to me and said, okay, we'll take her off you now. Yeah. You don't ever have to see her again. And no one has to know. I would be like, get the fuck away from my baby. No, she's mine. Like you are, and this is what I want to normalize as well. You are, it's totally normal to like love your child so much with just everything, with everything you have inside you, but also not necessarily enjoy every aspect of parenting or enjoy parenting every day. It's normal.
Do you know what? It's so interesting that you say that, because you have your baby and then you take the baby home and then everyone that comes around goes, you go, oh, I feel a bit tired. And they go, yeah, but you've got your baby now. And you go, oh, no, you're okay. And then you shut up. And then you
go, I'm not tired.
I'm just a bit knackered. And then they go, yeah, but you know, she's arrived. And you're like, yeah, I fucking know she's arrived, right? My vagina is reminding me of that every single moment. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about how I'm feeling day to day. And it's okay for me to grieve my old life, question my decision, think about like, am I, like you said, am I ever going to feel happiness again? Like a lot of people go through that, but we're not really allowed to say it in society.
No, it's such a taboo subject. So many of the feelings that we have are like, if we're made to feel like, because we are biologically like able to do this, that we should enjoy it and love every minute of it. And it's just, it's hard. It's a full-time job. It is mentally and physically draining when you give your entire soul to your child on a daily basis, as well as trying to live your own life and look after the other people or beings in your house and have a job outside of being a mum. It's so mentally and physically exhausting that it doesn't surprise me that women often think, oh, why have I done this? And it's okay to miss your old life. It's okay to miss the person you were before you had a baby. And it's okay to miss the freedom and the independence you had before you had a baby. But at the same time, I don't want this to all be doom and gloom. Like Noah has given me the moments, the biggest moments of joy I've ever felt in my life. Like my heart bursts whenever she like smiles at me when I wake up, when I go into her room in the morning. Like I walked into her nursery this morning and it stunk of shit. She'd done a massive poo and she was standing there in her cot. And I was like, your room stinks. I love you. Come here and give me a cuddle. I want her to go to sleep. I can't wait until she's asleep. And then I can't wait until she wakes up.
Yeah.
And that is why parenting is such a paradox, because you might find the everyday, you know, experience of looking after a baby really mundane and exhausting and tiring, but then they'll do one thing and your heart will just explode and you'll be like, oh, this is why.
There it is. There
really
it is.
There's the euphoria.
Yeah. We've read lots of articles that you've, you know, interviews that you've done with various, you know, publications and conversations that you've had, you know, that have been written about those dark days at the beginning. We've had someone on the podcast, Laura Canty, who came on to speak about her postnatal depression. How bad did it get for you?
It was worse than I could have ever imagined. I think my pregnancy lulled me into a false sense of security because I had a good pregnancy and I really enjoyed being pregnant. And I found it fascinating to watch my body change and grow this human being. But I never thought for a second that I would struggle as much as I did. I really thought, I'll work this motherhood shit out. Like I'll be able to do it. It will be hard, but I'll work things out pretty quickly. Nothing came naturally to me. I didn't find anything that easy. And when I'd gone through the first 3 weeks of going back and forth to hospital, was quite a few A&E visits we had with Noah. And then obviously going back for the last week, the last time we took her to A&E, I had to go back every day for like 5 days to have her antibiotics administered via IV drip. So the first 3 weeks were just very much like chaotic, no newborn bubble, in and out of hospital. Yeah. Is she going to die? Is she okay? Is she meant to be here? All of that. And then breastfeeding started to become a challenge because her reflux was so bad from all the antibiotics, I had to take her to cranial osteo. So I was in and out of the house going to cranial osteo. All I wanted to do was just be at home with my baby. Mm. Yeah. But I felt like we were just in and out, going here, there and everywhere. And we were in the middle of the pandemic. I couldn't see my family. You know, my family didn't meet Noah. Some of my family didn't meet her until she was a month old, which doesn't sound a long time. But we all know how much a baby changes in a month.
It's a really long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted everyone to see Noah straight away, but they weren't allowed round because we were only allowed to see the people that were in our bubble. And my family already had their bubbles. So it was just really hard because it was doorstep waving to friends who just dropped something on the doorstep. And I just wanted to hug my friends. But we were very much like, you know, we had to be in isolation. COVID was rampant still. And so all of these things combined just made me feel like I wasn't coping. And I just really struggled with those lonely night feeds because I wanted Bodge to get some sleep so he could help me in the day. And I don't regret doing that because I feel like if both of us had been tired in the day, it would have been a mess. So I really tried to do it on my own. And that's when my thoughts ran away with me. And I started Googling like postnatal depression and the signs and suicide rates among women who have had children. And I just thought to myself, well, I'm in a really dark place to be Googling this. And I didn't tell anyone that I'd Googled it. And I think Bodge realized when we had to do a day's filming for this TV show that we did on MTV in the run-up to the birth. It was called Celebrity Bumps. And we had to do a day's filming with them after Noah was born. During that filming, that they, I think, realized I wasn't coping very well. So the production company very kindly reached out and said, like, we'd like to offer you some therapy if you'll take it, which was really kind of them.
Yeah.
And I feel really grateful that they did that because I was pretty resistant and Bodge said, no, you're going to take it. And he spoke to the psychologist who we'd spoken to together before the show just to make sure that we were okay and well-equipped mentally to do the show. And Bodge phoned him and he said, like, Kate needs a therapist. Do you have anyone that you can recommend? And he recommended this lovely lady named Anna and she became my therapist. And the moment I started therapy, I was better. I felt better because I could tell her things that I didn't feel comfortable
You
know, telling anyone else.
Yeah. So the question is, when did you decide to write the book and who needs to read the book?
I was making notes throughout my pregnancy and in the first 6 months of Noah's life, I just was making notes rapidly because Bodge and I had planned to do a third series of Maybe Baby after Noah arrived to kind of wrap up the whole series. Because the first series was, Do I Want a Baby? The second series was, I'm pregnant. So we thought it was a nice idea. So I was making notes for that. And it was almost like keeping a diary, which I quite enjoyed. But then we decided, we recorded an episode of Maybe Baby. And I said to Bodge, I don't want to do this. I just feel like it's really doom and gloom. And the first two series were so upbeat and fun. And I just felt really uncomfortable talking to him. It was almost like, I don't know, I was talking to him about how I was feeling and how I didn't feel how I was feeling, but I couldn't tell him at the time, but I didn't really feel comfortable doing that. Yeah. And it was really strange because a publisher got in touch and said, would Kate be interested in writing a book? And I thought that's the outlet. That's how that's how I get all this out there because I feel more confident writing it than talking. Like you know, like you've heard me muddle my words. I struggle to articulate what I'm trying to say often. And I'm much better at writing things down.
I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say that at all. It's been so engaging.
Oh, really? I feel like I waffle and I repeat the same things. Like I just get, you know, I stumble over my words, but that's because I talk 100 miles an hour and Bodge is telling me to slow down. So I thought the book then would, like, I'll write the book because I've got all these notes and I want to share my story because I'd like to help other women out there and men and carers because, you know, so often we are told that, you know, we are going to grow up, we're going to get married and we're going to have kids and we're going to be really happily ever after. And it's not necessarily the case. And I think it's just more harmful to not have these conversations, these honest and candid conversations, because parents really need to think before choosing to have a baby about whether or not they actually want a child or they're, you know, or whether or not they are mentally equipped and all the other, you know, financially and everything like that, whether they are equipped to have a kid, because it is forever. It's a lifelong commitment. Yeah. It's not like you're buying a pair of shoes and you can take them back to the shop. You are a parent until you die. You are, once you've had that baby, you have to, you know, you've got to give it your, that baby has to be your number one priority. Yep. And you've got to be prepared to sacrifice so much. And it's not always going to be easy. But yeah, like making a baby with the person you love is just like, it's the best thing. Like, I mean, Bodge and I, like, we look at her every day and we can't believe we've made her. And that's, you know, we're talking about our love for each other and our love for the dogs and our love for Noah, but like, cause we've made Noah, it's just, it's crazy, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's mental, isn't it? Think about it.
You made a baby with a person you love. Like, what? She's half me and she's half you. It's just, I wanted to have these conversations because I know that there are women out there, especially because I've spoken to them on Instagram, who have experienced what I've gone through. And I think that's why I was very open on social media, because it was almost like a cry for help. Like, are there any other women who have gone through this? And am I the only one that's finding this really hard? Not just hard like my friends said it was going to be, really hard. Am I the only one that has these feelings of anxiety on a daily basis? Like, I constantly felt, even now I get those days, but they're few and far between, like where I've just got a knot in my stomach. Yeah, like I have so much to do. How am I going to do it? And in the early days, it was, oh my God, a knot in my stomach because she was asleep, but she might wake up. Or is she too hot? Or is she too cold? Or, oh my God, I'm leaving her with Bodhi's mom. Is she going to die in her care? Or I'm weaning her. Is she going to choke? Or she's not eating. Is she eating enough? Or like, it's just constantly worrying because I'm a worrier and I've got quite an anxious predisposition and I have had since I was in my mid 30s, I think. And so it is just like, it's so full on. And I guess that's why I wanted to write the book. But also, it's not just for people who are considering whether or not to have a baby. It's not just for new mums. It's for all the mums that have got kids who have grown up and maybe even who are grandmums, like who have gone through this but felt like they couldn't tell anybody because back in the day, there wasn't social media. There wasn't someone like me going, this is shit. Is anyone else out there?
Yeah.
They only had their friends and their family. And, you know, I didn't know that one of my best friends had gone through what I'd gone through until she told me after I was being honest on Instagram. Yeah. And I said, why didn't you tell me? She said, I just felt like I couldn't take
it. It goes back to that thing we were saying at the beginning of the chat, which is that you don't feel that you can because everyone expects you to be in absolute bliss. And when you're not, they're like, what? Oh, it'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just people just don't know what to do. I think we are so much better equipped now to look out for like our friends, you know, and to check in on them. We know now to do that. Whereas even like 5 years ago, we didn't. Like when we had Axel and Luna, I just didn't think about doing that.
No, then you had me checking in on you every 5 seconds because I was living down the road from you. Hello, new friend that I met in a coffee shop. Hello. Do you want to hang out?
I love that.
And before we go, we always like to ask our guests one piece of advice that they would give to a new mum or the piece of advice they wish that they'd been given.
I guess if I was giving myself advice before, even now actually, it was whether you've got children or not, it's don't allow anyone to let you feel guilty about the life choices you make. Because if you don't want children, that's okay. And so often women and men are asked why they don't want children. There doesn't need to be a why. Nobody has to justify why they don't want children. If they don't want them, they don't want them. But even when you have a baby, you're then getting people asking you, are you going to have another one? But why not? An only child is a lonely child. I don't have to justify my reasons for not wanting another child. If I want to just have one, that's my decision and it really shouldn't bother you. And I guess my advice for new parents is, it's perfectly normal and okay to have dark days and times where you feel like stressed and frustrated with yourself and to have days where you feel like you might not know what you're doing. But it gets easier month by month. And in fact, it gets easier week by week. I don't want to say month by month, because if you're in the throes of it and you're thinking you can't get through the next 20 minutes, which is what I was, and everyone was going, just get through the first 6 months. And I was like, I know you're trying to help, but I don't need to hear that right now. Like, I don't even think I can get through the next day. Yeah. And you're saying, I've got another 6 months. Like, I know that they meant it really well, but that made me even worse. Like, I'm just repeating what everyone told me. I was in the throes of it. And so many people reached out. So many people. Like, I was inundated. Friends and family, my Instagram community, everyone promised me it would get easier. And they are right. Like, nothing for me is as apocalyptic as those newborn days and is as difficult. Like, Noah now has a tantrum, but my word, like, I'm not in a dark place like I was back then. It does get easier and your feelings change as quickly as your children do. So hang in there.
Because we like to hear about the latest like products and gadgets and stuff, what would you say your five like must-haves are? Maybe for the first year of parenting.
Oh, do you know what? I wrote this in the book.
Ugh.
I'm a massive fan of Love to Dream swaddles because I got taught how to swaddle Noah in hospital and it was like the traditional method of swaddling. But babies naturally have their hands up in the womb, don't they? And they sleep with their hands up. And these Love to Dream swaddles, you can basically just zip your baby up in the swaddle and their hands stay up and they look like little angel wings. Aww. It's the cutest thing. And you can have those from when they're really young as well. And Noah was in hers. I mean, she's now in the Love to Dream sleeping bags with legs and she loves them. But as a newborn, the moment we stopped swaddling her, having her arms like down by her sides, like a straight jacket, and we put her in that and her arms, she slept so much better. So that improved her sleep. So
that's
you're struggling with sleep and you don't really know what to put them in and you don't want to leave them with a blanket because sometimes they can throw a blanket over their own heads, that it's safe as well. So yeah. I'm all about safe sleep. If you're formula feeding the Tommy Tippy Perfect Prep Machine,
yes,
I didn't know about it, and we spent so long putting the bottles in the saucepan.
The noise, though,
I know, but it is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's the perfect temperature as soon as it's done, and it saves you having to put your bottle of milk in a Pyrex jug of boiling hot water. Yes. It took us so long, and someone was like, "Why don't you just get the Perfect Prep Machine?" I don't know. When you're a mum, it's like, of course you're going to have one of those, but actually, when you're not a parent and you don't know about them,
you don't even know what it is.
I didn't know this. It's the perfect temperature within seconds. I'm a big fan of the snooze shade. The snooze shades they do for your pram and your buggy, and it's basically safe to keep the sun out, but it also, if they're napping in the day and it's quite bright, it gives them a bit of darkness. But more, the snooze shade that I love, even though that snooze shade is great, is the one for the cot. So if you don't have like blackout, it's so good, because when we went on holiday, our hotel room did have blackout curtains, but it still wasn't dark enough. So we put the snooze shade over the cot, and her cot was completely blackout. So that I'd recommend. Like, Noah's a nuzzler, so she really loved nuzzling into my arm when I held her. And our doula said to me, like, you should get a little comforter, because she's going to like nuzzling into one. And everybody buys you comforters when you have a baby. Yes. Like, it's one of the most common presents you get, like a comforter. So she had quite a lot of comfies, but there was one I got sent, and I think it's from the Little Baby Hut, and it's like a chunky knit comfy, and it's got holes in. So if it's over her head, which so often it is, we'll look at her in bed, and we're like, look at her right now on the monitor. She's laying there, and she's like, her arms out, and the comfy's just over her face, but it's covered in holes, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But that is her favorite comfy, and it washes. Such a mum comment. It washes so
well.
It comes up really well in the wash. Yeah, it does. But it comes up well in the wash, and it's not expensive, and it's so soft. And she, when I say, where's your comfy, she grabs it and she puts it in their face, and she loves it. So I'd recommend a nice, soft, chunky knit comfy.
Okay, I think for us, I can speak for Georgia, although I haven't asked her yet. She might say afterwards, oh, what a crap conversation that was. But we absolutely love you. We think everything that you're doing on social media is brilliant, kind of raising awareness around this subject. And thank you for being so honest. I think you're helping millions of women out there, and I cannot wait to get my hands on a copy of your book.
Thank you, ladies, and keep up the good work with your podcast as well. It's brilliant.
I want to go on a night out with Kate Lawler and get drunk and do shots with her.
Me too. Get on a train back to Birmingham with her.
Yes.
I was really laughing about that. Can you imagine how he felt? He woke up in the morning and she basically couldn't remember anything that happened. Then he had to get the train back to London from Birmingham with an awful hangover. And then he's greeted by a round of applause.
That's amazing.
From all his co-workers. It really, really made me laugh. I mean, what a great night for him.
I mean, seriously, it doesn't matter how hungover you were, you would be on that train journey thinking, did I just snog Kate Lawler? Did that just happen? I'm not quite sure. Oh, brilliant.
But also, you know, Kate's so honest about how she's felt, you know, in the last year. She's made 12 months, first 12 months of motherhood. And it's not, you know, it's not always easy. And I was really, you know, I was really pleased that she sort of said that she doesn't always love it. And of course, she really looked into whether or not she wanted to be a mother in the first place or not, and then had made the decision. And still, you know, was surprised by how difficult it was and how much stuff can come up that you don't always expect. So thank you so much, Kate, because I think it really helps when we've got people like you around who are so honest and open about how they're feeling and how they're struggling. But also, you know, now coming out the other side of it a year on, really enjoying it, you know, and loving, you know, loving certain parts of motherhood.
Yeah, and that's really important. I think that's something that Georgia and I always try and focus on, that it's absolutely okay to say that you're not enjoying it. It doesn't mean you're not going to enjoy it forever. People are really terrified of saying that they're not enjoying parenting. You know, oh no, well, you know, I wouldn't want anyone else, you know, wouldn't want it to get back to anyone else. I wasn't having a great time all the time. It's like, of course it's not a great time all the time. And actually, sometimes during parenting, you can feel like you're never going to come out of the pits.
Yeah.
But actually, you do. It's like up, and it's like the wildest rollercoaster ride of your life, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, I just think, you know, people have different jobs and they like different aspects of their job, and they might not like other aspects. It doesn't mean that you hate your job.
Yeah.
It's the same, you know. Some people love the, you know, the slow pace of life at the beginning, maybe. Some people can't bear that and they want to be out doing activities with their kids. You know, it's everyone has, yeah, a different opinion on the things that they like and they don't.
And different experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you. We love that chat.
Yeah, we really did. We hope you guys did as well. As always, we would love your feedback. You can rate, review, subscribe and follow the podcast. Please, if you have time, do leave us a review because they're so lovely. We love reading them. They really give us a little perk up, actually.
We do. We like the confidence boost. But if you have got any feedback or anything you want to discuss on the back of this podcast or any topics you think that would be great for us to have a chat about, then please do just drop us a DM. We're on at Made by Mamas on Instagram and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.